Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the SM Elden Ring podcast. I am your host, Joe. Yes, that is right. It is a Tuesday episode, so that means all Elden Ring all the time. Tim is here. Brooke is here. Chris is here. Pernell is here. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing okay. I got to tell you, this will be the first week where I didn't get to play much Elden Ring this week. So, shocker. I won't have them, but then we got Chris is now a participant.
So. Oh, yeah. I've been looking forward to this.
Wow. I barely started it.
Okay. Yeah, you got you bought two games on Sunday. I think I saw you tweet, oh, this is going to be the best weekend ever. Wait, it's over.
Yeah, I tweeted that after midnight on Sunday.
Oh, gosh. Did you try the Kirby game yet? Has anybody tried it?
No. I have. It's Kirby. It's very Kirby. Cool. Like, that's funny because all the trailers were talking about how, like, it's like Kirby in 3D. It's like everybody was expecting this open world Kirby adventure. It's like, no, it's just Kirby, but he can run in a circle now. But it's okay.
And he can mouth him.
Yeah.
He can choke down a car. I can't knock that. I do enjoy Kirby.
Actually, the one I like is that he can choke down a flight of stairs.
I saw a meme about that. I didn't know if it was real. I'm delighted to know.
It is real. Awesome. That's how you move stairs around so you can get to places.
Cool.
I find it funny, though, how they do that. Like, it's just Kirby, so it's not like I'm, like, doing continuity BS, but they talk about how this game is, like, he tried to swallow the car to get stuck in his mouth, which is why he can drive it. But then there was, like, two games ago or three games ago, it was Kirby Triple Deluxe, where he could pretty much, like, suck in the damn cosmos if he held down the button. So it's like, what happened to him? Did he get laryngitis? Sore throat? My suck power ain't what it used to be, kids.
Kirby's like an elder god. He can take whatever form the mythology requires.
That is true. He's an eldritch beast after all, whether people admit it or not.
Kirby. I like how I did an Elden Ring intro and now y'all are talking about Kirby.
That's awesome.
You assholes.
My child wants the game really bad, and I realized like I shouldn't just get it for him because that wouldn't necessarily be great parenting when his birthday is like a month away, so he's getting it for his birthday.
Well, you could get him this and then get him a lackluster birthday present, and then when he starts to cry, I go, you got your present. This is a formality.
I can see you'll be a great parent someday.
I will, right? I'm like, that's why I got you eggplants for Christmas. Go to sleep.
Yeah. No, I gave him the old man speech of, you know, when I was your age. Well, one, when I was his age, we had an Atari in the house. We didn't have our NES yet. But two, when it came to, you know, getting video games, it was, you know, like birthday, Christmas, and then maybe somehow you could finagle some throughout the year through begging or finding sales or, you know, saving up money. And I'm just like, you know, kids these days, it's just everything's fucking free. So
he says, give them a wood truck. That's all they need.
he's had his share of wood trucks. He has multiple Hess trucks and plane and Hess plane.
plane.
Yeah, the truck was a plane this year.
Wow. Really?
Go smooth out some wood.
Yeah.
Your plane.
Yeah, a couple years ago, it wasn't even, it was a, like, it was an RV. It's like, okay.
This year, it's not going to be a Hess truck, it's going to be a Hess moped because gas costs too much.
So your child is 55 years old and looking to retire.
Well, I would, yeah.
No. Aren't we all looking to retire?
No, I already know I'm not going to be able to retire. I'm going to wrestle gators in the swamp.
Oh, hell yeah. Now you're speaking my language, Florida girl over here.
Are there swamp gators in Elden Ring?
Probably.
No, I can't say no for sure, but I don't think I have not run into a gator yet. And
I have something that came up today that ties both of the games together, which I thought was pretty
cool.
Somebody made a comment today to me in regards to, it was like meme based, of course, where it was one of those like Mario memes that was meant to represent that one of guys like, no, but actually this. And the top one where it was like, no, not this. It was like, Kirby is too easy. Why can't this game be any harder? And then like the second thing with the yes, like the saying that complaining that Kirby is too easy is equivalent to complaining that Elden Ring is too hard. You can't have it. Sounds like actually you can make both complaints if you want, as long as you're not complaining about why won't the developer change it, because if the developer doesn't want to, they don't have to. But like with Kirby, I wouldn't mind Kirby games being more challenging. The hardest one I've ever played was the Amazing Mirror, because you got fucking lost everywhere.
Yeah, but, I still haven't beaten that one.
It's a hard game.
Yeah,
but like
that game.
With the exception of that game, to me, traditional Kirby platformers are like relaxation games. Like you play them, it's fun to look for the secrets and stuff and see what Kirby can do. But it's like the path of least resistance games. Like you're not going to really feel yourself getting taxed, except for maybe some of the final boss fights or something.
Yeah, the earlier Dreamlands, like you have these ridiculous like things that you have to do in most levels to get like the good ending. So getting the good ending does ratchet the difficulty up quite a lot, because it puts you in situations where you have to use like the worst possible like animal friend for the situation, like for a whole level without getting hit.
It was kind of Bob on a level with no water.
Yes, exactly correct.
I remember that. But like the thing though is like, but that's like extra, you know, like bonusy stuff, which is cool, you know. It's like if a kid wanted to sit down and play Kirby, they could just blitz the game and go, Mom, I won. It's like, that's great, kid. Play it again, because I can't afford a second game. And but, you know, if you're playing as one of us, it's like, okay, I want to get the bonus ending. I got to do what with the stupid fish? Well, whatever, let's figure it out, you know? And you have fun with it. But, like, I wouldn't mind if they came out one day and says, Nick, like, because in this game, they even had, like, a wild mode or whatever, which everybody's claiming is, like, it's not really difficult. It's just them saying it's more difficult. But I wouldn't mind if they made it more difficult one day. It's like, here's a Kirby game where he can only eat, like, five things a level. You better choose wisely, because he gets full, or everything he eats calories, and he walks slower or some shit.
Oh, wow. Some Yume Penguin Monogatari right there.
Yeah, like Kirby's not bottomless. He actually has to walk off what he eats. That would be an interesting random mode. But if they never put it in the game, I'm not going to cry. You know, but it would be nice if they did.
For folks who don't know obscure Japanese like Famicom games, Yume Penguin Monogatari is a game where you play a penguin who has to rescue his girlfriend from this guy that's trying to steal her away. But the problem is that there's constantly like treats falling from the sky, and if you get hit by the treats, you eat them and you turn fat. And then you have to exercise to get back to where you can like jump and move and stuff.
I like how you had put a disclaimer of like, for those who aren't familiar with super obscure Japanese only games, as if you're the only person who is familiar. Like I guarantee you're the only one who on this show who knows what that game is.
No, it is. I know what it is.
Really?
Yeah, I would know.
Yeah,
of course, Pernod.
Huh? And there's also, I mean, it's not a real game per se, but it was like a Sonic mod that was kind of like reminiscent of that game, where the rings made Sonic fat, and he couldn't run anymore. He had to dodge
all.
Yeah.
So, and, Chris, how was your time with Elden Ring?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me describe my 2 hours with Elden Ring so far.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, I was like, okay, well, here we go. I'm going to play this game. By the way, I bought the British version of it unknowingly, but I actually have, thanks to this show, I have a European account. So, if they ever come out with DLC, then I got to access my other account to download it. But anyways,
Did it come with tea bags?
Not with tea bags. It did come with like some patches and like some pictures and like a little booklet thing.
Nice.
So yeah.
No, you can teabag. You can crouch now.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, in the game. I just mean like in IRL. So
you can also crouch in real life, Chris.
Not with my.
And don't let anybody tell you can't.
My doctor says I can't.
Oh no.
Anyways, so yeah, I started my game, and like most open world games, I always start a character called Ted Canary, because he is my canary that's going to go into the game and die, and then I'm going to figure out what build I need to make at that point.
Nice.
See, that's, I always call my first character my canary. And so Ted Canary, I was like, well, this is a new man, so I'm going to pick the new man setting for my character. And I kind of made him look like a pizza delivery guy. I don't know. Started him off as warrior because that was just like balanced stats. And I was like, I don't have time to think. I just want to get into this thing and start rolling. And I managed to not miss the tutorial because I didn't read anything on the ground, so I wasn't distracted. Like, I don't like the stuff on the ground, and I don't like the ghosts, so I'm going to try and turn those off at some point.
Yeah, you can turn those off.
Yeah.
You just play offline.
Well, I put it on offline mode, and they were still there. Oh, so
no, those will be because they're developer ones, but eventually that won't be a thing.
Right. So, yeah. I went in the hole and did the tutorial, managed to beat the tutorial boss, quote unquote, you know.
Ooh,
with,
nice.
And I didn't get hit at all. So I was like, he came at me.
Fucking legend.
Yeah, well, I was just like, it was like, okay, here's your jump slash. And I was like, that's a good jump slash. So I just jump slashed the guy and then hit him like with a regular hit and he went down. So I was like, oh, okay, well.
Awesome. Wait, are you talking about like the very first boss that you're supposed to die to?
No, not that guy.
Oh, okay.
No, I died to that guy like I was supposed to.
So the soldier guy, the dude with the
just
spear?
Just the soldier. Yeah. Just
all right, I thought you were talking about the actual, like, the first tutorial boss that's supposed to kill you.
Dude,
no, I mean, I knew you could. Like, I was like, well, I could do this, but I don't really want to, like, spend my whole limited amount of time in life trying to sequence break this. So I will someday.
It doesn't make that big a difference.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm the guy
that, thing?
No.
No, okay.
I'm the guy that like spent like 30 hours grinding bees in Lufia 2 so I could beat Goddess the first time around, and I did it. So
what happens when you do that?
You get the Goddess sword early. It's a unique item that you only otherwise find in the Cave of the Ancients. So it's actually really cool to beat him when you like are not supposed to. Anyways. Here's the thing, though, like between fighting that guard and that the guard is the one I didn't get hit by. And
nice job, like, by the way. I died to him a shitload.
Oh, thank you. I saw all the bloodstains on the ground and I was like, oh, this guy's going to be tough.
That's where Brooke was.
It is true.
Cameo by Brooke as a bloodstain. But anyway, so, yeah, I take the old elevator back up and I was like, okay, here we go. And I like walked around the castle a little bit because I didn't want to go down the dirt path to the, you know, first boss that I knew was there to kill me. And then while walking around the castle, I fell off the cliff accidentally and died.
Hell yeah. Now we're doing Brooke style.
Yeah. Now I died on the way to the boss that was supposed to kill me and give me my quote unquote first death. And then, so that, you know, the guy killed me, barely even got a look at him because I was trying to run for the door. And then I woke up and then immediately proceeded to, I got to the chapel or whatever with the guy that sells you stuff, but I haven't yet made it to the one where you get to level up. So I'm just wandering around in level one still. Cool. And I've been jump slashing bats.
Nice.
I also played the game, so I put like 2 hours into it myself. I did get to the fire that you got to go to level up, so I am now level 14.
Ho ho! Congrats!
Yeah, buddy.
That's quick.
Well, I started at 9, so
yeah,
and then I got.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did fight one boss in a cave that wrecked my shit. Multiple times, and I was really upset that I was losing all my runes and I had no way to like get them and then run away from the boss.
Yeah.
So I ended up rage.
Oh, do you want to know how?
I was going to say I ended up rage quitting and then I turned the game on and I died outside the boss room.
Oh.
So you were able to collect your runes outside of it?
I was able to get my runes outside the boss room and then run the fuck away and fight that guy.
Yeah, that is actually the trick is if you're in a boss or if your runes are in a boss room and you don't want to lose them, you pick them up and then you quit out of the game and it puts you back outside the boss room.
My God, how many levels have I lost not knowing that? But at the same time, it's my fault for walking into like a boss fight first try. I'm like, oh, I got 8,000 runes. I'll just try this boss.
Don't worry about it. It's all relative.
I'm still having a good time.
Dude, it takes me like about 100,000 runes to level up right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm in the 30s still. So I'm I'm just, you know, I'm having a good time. I did.
Sure.
I really wanted to talk to you and Purnell about, I had an awesome boss fight. And I know a lot of people probably faced this guy even earlier than I did. And I'm kind of behind y'all. But I did Knights Cavalry. And,
oh, you did one of them? There's many of
them. Oh, my God. Okay, that's good. Because I actually, like, I just thought that was such a beautiful fight. Like, the music is the best. I'm sure I could hear, like, that boss music on other bosses, but that was the first time I'd heard those deep cellos, and it, like, blew me. As soon as I went through that, I was like, oh my God, I gotta talk to them about this. I love the horse, like, booty bump where he, like, slams you, and it's actually really scary. I face bosses that are harder than him, for me at least, and, like, that boss is just really scary. They make the environment scary. The whole immersion of, like, well, I don't want to, like, give anything away of how he shows up, but somebody had to tell me how to get him, because I was looking for him. I didn't know. I just thought it was beautiful.
I've actually never seen that boss. Where's that guy at?
So,
dude, I don't want to tell you in case Chris considers it a spoiler of, like, the listeners.
Oh, Chris doesn't care about spoilers, no. And I'm not going to anyway.
Listeners, plug your ears.
Well, there's a number of them, actually. But they only come out at night. So,
like the freaks.
Huh?
Like, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. These are the freaks that come out at night. So you have to be just kind of wandering the roads at night. And there's certain areas where you'll find them. Like, if you see messages on the ground and kind of in random places on the road that say try night, that's probably what they're cluing you into.
Like, there's a guy, I saw someone was telling me about a fight, but he wouldn't tell me what it was, where there's a cabin near where you meet the girl that gives you the squid or the jellyfish. And it had signs there saying Katry Knight or something.
Oh, yep.
Why are these blood patches just all over the ground? Mm-hmm. Was like, go back at night. I was like, I stayed there at night. He was like, you got to wait. I was like, wow.
I got a surprise when I did that. That was, I was not expecting what happened.
By surprise, you mean die?
No, I didn't die, but.
Dying is not a surprise.
Yeah, seriously.
In front of that cabin while that guy's just hanging out there. He doesn't come out to help you fight him. He just chills, like, look at that noob get fucked up.
He's not there.
I don't think I fought that yet, but I'm going to go check it out.
It's one of those many small weird things about the game that is very easy to miss.
That's the best, my favorite thing in the game, dude. It's amazing.
We're in the same place, though, right? It's like some guy's cabin, and he sells you stuff. He sells you, like, I guess ashes, maybe, even.
Yep, Ashes of War, yep.
All right. So you're saying at night, if I'm there at the right time, he won't actually be in the cabin.
Correct.
Okay. In that case, it was like maybe dusk or something. I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
What is this? Nothing's happening.
Yeah. If you set the clock to night and go there, well, you'll see.
See hell unleashed. And I fought that Deathwing bird, though. And I was like, oh, is this the guy you're talking about? He was like, no, that's not the boss. That's just a dumb bird.
But you fought a Deathwing bird?
Yeah, so, like, at that cabin, like I said, the friend was like, come back at night. So I came back, and I thought I was there at night, and nothing happened. So I just ran around the area a bit, and there's this giant, like, bird with, like, a skeletal face or whatever jumped off of one of those ruins and started chasing me around on my horse. I was like, fuck this shit.
Did it have, like, a life bar?
He had a life bar, yeah.
What the fuck? I have no idea what that is. I've heard of it, but I didn't see that one there.
So is that another enemy that shows up in multiple places or something?
I think so, yeah.
Apparently, yeah.
Interesting.
That's an enemy that doesn't exist in the game.
Here's something you might know that I'm trying to figure out still. Have you ever come across a statue that had, like, a gash in it with some light shining out of it?
Yes.
What do you do with it?
So you have to, there is an enemy somewhere in the area that can smash it, that you need to, like, lure over to attack it, basically, and then it'll break it open, and you can get the goodies.
So that environmental damage actually has a use. I like that.
Yes, yeah.
Pretty cool. Those giant ogres are walking around there, so I can get one of them.
I fought so many ogres, you guys, and I still haven't seen what happened to me the very first time I fought one, which is that one picked up a dog and threw it at me. I don't know if y'all saw that clip.
I did see that.
Oh my God. And that is still, I was like, oh man, shit, like, this is going to be happening all the time in this game. And what I love is that I didn't see that again. One time I was fighting one of those dudes in the sun, and he was, like, shielding his eyes because the sunrise were coming on. I like that they have little details like that, but they're not throwing it in all, they're not overusing them. So, like, if it happens to you once every 20 times, it's just, like, really special. It's so fucking cool.
I just like the fact that you said throw a dog at you.
I'm gonna link you to that, dude. That is like, I think that was the first clip I tried to post from PS4 Share because I was like, I gotta show people this. I gotta figure this out.
Yeah, and I gotta see that.
Dog who's like trying to fight you, and the guy picks it up, throws it at you, slams into you. Then the dog gets up and starts biting you. Like, I didn't throw your ass, idiot. Why are you biting me?
I don't want to give spoilers to my own clip, but he threw that dog and it was not attacking me after he threw it. Let me just say it was a little rough to see. Neither of us survived that one.
You died together.
That was actually the night when you were like, Brooke, you can totally take that troll on. And right after the show, I was like, I'm going to do it. But I didn't do it the first time. No, I didn't.
Right in this episode, I'm going to walk up to that troll. I'm going to punch it in the back of the head.
This is for that dog.
So here's a question for all of you, since you've been playing this. Generally, what the fuck do I do in this game? Because
explore whatever you want.
I've been exploring around, and everything is going to kill me, and I'm afraid to do anything in the game because I don't want to lose all my progress all the time.
Yeah,
well, but I have a feeling I just have to suck it up and realize that I'm going to have to lose my progress.
So
trick is, if you're exploring in the wild, like out in the street or whatever, I personally just wouldn't stress runes too much. It's just how it is. You're looking around, you're exploring. But if you're in a dungeon environment, just drop rune things down, let people summon you, and you can explore with them. If you get wrecked, you pretty much lose nothing.
Oh, I don't understand how the multiplayer stuff works at all.
Yeah, I still haven't really done it myself.
You're like, drop a rune and do this. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that means.
Well sit down. Let me spin you a tale. there's like a frail finger or something, like a thick finger item. And when you use that item, you'll put like a gold symbol on the floor. And that's basically what other people can see in their game if they're looking to summon you. And they'll walk up to it, they'll summon you into the game. You'll get a message that says you're coming into such a game as a cooperator. And you'll join their game.
And you'll be like, haha, suckers.
I'm here to play poorly. And if you want to summon people into your game, there's an item that I don't remember the name of, but I'm sure Tim does, where if you use it,
it's a finger.
No, it's a finger curling remedy something.
You use that thing, the finger curling remedy. It looks like a compact. But when you use that, you're able to see the gold emblems on the floor and summon someone into your game after you see one. And they're not hard to get because you can pretty much make them using items you find out in the fields. You end up with a ton of it. So, and with that, when you do stuff like that, once you start doing that, you're not really going to care a great deal about runes anymore. You're just going to get them as you get them and spend them as you spend them. I have yet to have a moment where I was like, fuck my runes. It was just like, runes, whatever.
I wanted a nice hat, but I couldn't get it.
The real secret of these games is that, like, your souls and your runes don't actually really matter that much. Or at all, really. Like, if you lose them all, like, who fucking cares? Because, because the way the cost for a level, like, scales upward, like, you'll get there eventually, you know? Like, if you are under-leveled, like, you will be fighting enemies that give you so many runes that, like, you'll catch up very quickly. Or it's like, at the point I'm at in the game, and really, like, for a lot of the game, it's like, when you beat a boss, that's when you get a truckload of runes that you're like, okay, I'm going to get some levels. Like, what really matters more, and this sounds,
bullshit.
No. I mean, that is a thing you could do, but the multiplayer is complicated and confusing, and you're not always going to find people in the area that you are. Like, you got to look for the little, like, summon, like, idols, whatever, that you can activate the summoning pool. But that also lets people invade you, so.
As Mr. Rogers says.
I need to hear this Mr. Rogers quote. Hold up.
I said Mr. Rogers said once, look for the helpers.
Yes.
Nice.
But he never had an invader. So you have to use those summoning pools to get that to happen?
I think so, but I'm not sure. Because I've only had it happen once, and boy, did that guy get smoked. But I was going to say, the actual, important thing in these games is literally the knowledge you gain along the way. It is learning where the enemies are, how they attack, like how to beat them, and learning that stuff. But also, like, the stuff you pick up, like the weapons you find, the crafting materials you find. Because in the long run, like, what makes a much bigger difference in, like, your damage is going to be upgrading a weapon. And what makes a bigger difference in you staying alive is not getting hit, basically. Yeah. So yes, you know, it's not like if you never level up at all, like you're still, you know, you're asking for a bad time, but don't get too fixated on like, oh my God, I just lost all my runes. I lost my progress. It's like, no, you sit there and you think, you think about what you did. Like,
you again.
And the real trick is like when you have zero runes, just get on your horse and fucking ride, man. Or just run through enemies, like looking for shit to grab. Like, you know, you lose those runes, you turn it back on the game. Be like, all right, motherfucker, I got nothing to lose. So I'm just going to run and grab, and I'm going to run through the highest level area I can find and grab all the shit I see and peace out. Whatever. If I die, I still have all that stuff, because you don't actually lose the items you pick up. And you pick up just those like rune items. Yeah, you just runes and like rune items that you pick up. Like, you don't lose those, like those golden runes. You don't lose those when you die. They're in your item. So it's like when you need to, you know, when you like, if I have a bunch of runes, say, and I look at how much I need to level, I'll be like, OK, I need, let's say, 2000 runes to level and I don't want to lose what I have. I will then go into my inventory, pull out one of those rune items, you know, gobble a couple of those, get my level. And then it's like, oh, I only have 100 runes in my left after this level. I don't care. Do that.
Yeah, I've done
YOLO
that
and go kill things.
Yeah. And but there's ways of managing this stuff.
And I can tell you, I found a shield at one point that has surprisingly been really useful for like the fact that I suck at like counters, even with the easier countering or whatever. It's called the Shield of the Guilty. And its skill item is called the Shield Bash. It's essentially like a guard, and then you dash and knock the guy back. So if you find yourself in a situation where like you're trying to tank blows from an enemy that's not a boss, almost pretty much without fail, I'm pretty much like, okay, I'm gonna use Shield Bash. I keep my shield stance up, so I'm still blocking the blows. Then you dash forward, and the guy goes flying backwards. So it's pretty much been a get out of jail free move for me on a regular basis. But found it. I haven't changed it since. Yet I'm still wearing the same clothes I started the game with. Fancy.
Dude, man. Same. Not all of them, but you know, I got my I call it my black t-shirt, the bandit thing you start with. I freaking love it. I really want to beat this game, you know, like just the starter.
I got like one new piece of equipment and I got a flail that I'm not strong enough to use.
Oh, nice.
The flail what I'm using right now, actually.
It takes a while to like really find, well, you know, when you're starting out, it takes a while to find stuff that you can really, you know, works with your character and that you can actually, like, I found so much shit that I'm like, I can't wield this fucking weapon. I can't, like, I'm not strong enough for the shield. I don't know sorcery. Like, where is all the faith stuff? And now I know where it all is. But, you know, early on, I was just like, I'm using the same goddamn weapon. I'm wearing the same fucking clothes. I got the, like, it was a while as a faith character before I was like, oh, okay, now I have some shit and now I'm really trucking. But
a part of me is kind of regretting using a sorcerer character, because usually I use faith and dex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be an intelligence magic character. And yet, apparently, the incantations pale in comparison, or the sorcery pales to the magic that you get for faith in this game.
Well, you know what? I think I actually do have way more faith incantations now at this point than sorceries. So maybe there is some truth to that, but I know sorcery is pretty powerful.
Yeah, I was watching a video of a guy taking down like every boss with like two spells, like of the sorcery kind.
Yeah,
Carnage just posted a link in chat showing a 29-minute speed run of the game.
Oh, there's sub 20 minutes.
There's sub 20 minutes.
Yeah,
actually, from Tyler, the dude that like we had on the show last week? Yeah, last week. He like tweeted. He's like, yo, it's speed runs under 20 minutes now, and I was like, oh my god. But that's then insane. Yeah, I didn't want to watch it. Somebody told me it was like exploiting the game somehow.
Oh, yes.
Not like really.
Oh, no. Transporter trap is another one.
No.
Pernell, are you on speakerphone, by the way? It sounds like
you know he's playing Elden Ring right now. So
I'm playing Elden Ring.
Oh my god.
I'm at Lewandale Capital. Where the fuck is this?
Oh, pull your map up, buddy. Look where you are.
Oh shit.
Okay, that I would pay $5 for that to be a soundbite. How much do I have to pay? That is amazing.
I know exactly what he just did, and I know exactly where he is, and I know exactly what he just saw.
That's amazing.
I'm like, get the other half of the map.
No, you're up at the top of the map where that you didn't even know was there.
Yeah. It's like I went from the very bottom to the way.
Yeah. So the any percent speed run is under 20 minutes, and like the all like main bosses speed run is under 2 hours. And I can tell you basically like what they're doing is they have there is some way to trick the game into warping you into the wrong place with the fast travel.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And also they figured out how to make the horse walk on air in some spaces. That's what's going on.
I knew they couldn't escape the Skyrim curse with horses.
Yeah. So like a lot of it, I mean, I haven't watched the any percent one either because I don't want to see the end game shit. I've watched some of the all bosses one because it is in areas that I have been to and bosses I have fought just to see what they're doing. There is a shield art, which I'm blanking on now. It's like called Carrion Revenge or something like that. And they use that to like reflect magic from a Wraith summoning bell. And then it makes their magic attack super powerful. And it's, I'm not sure if it's an exploit or a glitch or it's just overpowered and something they're going to patch, but that's how they're killing everything is this combination of the,
they're killing everything.
Literally they don't start fighting things until they have these pieces in place. Like it's like 20 minutes of running around, gathering items and setting things up. And then they start riding their horse into boss fights across the air.
Sky horse.
You know what, Joe? I don't know if you remember, but I was scared to fight anything for like 5 or 6 days of playing Elden Ring. And I had a very stern talking to from Purnell, who changed my life. Thanks again, Purnell. But you know what happened in that time? Not only did I get to like piss off and mystify my boyfriend, who's an old Dark Souls player, and he is like of all the games, and he was like, "What are you doing? No one's playing the game like this." I snuck around and like he was watching me. So it was kind of funny, but I was like, how many sites of grace can I find by sneaking around? How many treasures can I steal from like mobs to sort of just see what's going to happen here? And most of the stuff I would steal or like get or was like, oh, pickled chicken foot or like strip of flesh or whatever. But I got a lot of like gold seeds and shit, like stuff that really upgraded my flasks. And then I think I was walking into my first real like big fights with probably more flasks than other people because I've been so scared. Like if you're scared to like sneak around and explore too much, I would say don't be, because you can run faster with all these than all the enemies in this game, dude. I think actually Tim told me that. Maybe not all, but like you can get like.
Let me tell you, the rune bears are very fast.
Oh shit! Yeah, I'm not talking about
those. They will nip at your heels even when you're on the horse.
I'm so scared of them still. I'm over here taking out like these bigger bosses now, and I'm like, I ain't fucking with those bears.
They're nasty.
They're so fast.
The bears are wild. Mm-hmm. Like I said, that was that one boss fight version where he blindsided me. I didn't even notice what he looked like. It was just you're dead. Like from what? What killed me?
The bears remind me of the bears in Etrian Odyssey 4. I think Purnell might know what I'm talking about.
Oh, hey, I played that game. Oh, God, yes.
Right?
Yep.
All the way down to the way they chase you.
Yeah.
Etrian Odyssey games, man. I got it. I guess I won't trail off on that topic, but later on you'll have to tell me if you played Nexus or not.
I haven't played it yet, no.
I have a sealed copy.
I have the whole collection and half of them are sealed because I've only beaten 3 and 4 so far.
That's where I'm at. So I've only beaten the first one.
Oh wow! First one's serious business.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, especially once you get to the bone to freaking final floor and the battle music changes to some like freaking heavy shit. You're well, this game is very difficult. It's a very confusing stage layout. The battle music sounds harsher than the boss theme. It's wild.
Yeah.
And holy shit, this giant is trying to get through this. Whoa, I'm going to die.
I really hope they bring back Etrian Odyssey at some point. We don't need the map drawing. Just bring it to Switch, guys.
I mean, I'll admit, I'm going to miss the map drawing if it's not there in some capacity, but I agree. If it's not having it, but having the game versus not having anything, I'll take the game without the map drawing.
Every
time I would play an Etrian game, I would put auto map drawing on just because I like, oh, hey, I could draw on the screen and draw the just fucking whatever. I want to explore. I don't want to sit drawing a map for 20 minutes.
I just love the map. It's like, well, I just got real fast at it. But then, Mike, here's a question. Since you said you beat three, and we'll just call it Elden Odyssey, then it fits.
Okay.
My big gripe is that I really suck at making decisions involving, like, specs for characters.
Same.
In that game, you have, like, one character, and then you have to get the subclasses. The first one that has subclasses. And I have no fucking clue where to go. Like, my main character in that game is a princess, which is great for, like, supporting everybody else. But she kind of blows for, like, battle. But I'm like, well, okay, I need the support enough. But I have no idea. I have no clue what to do to actually, like, the cross-job them so I can actually make sense of what I'm doing.
So the key with Etrian Odyssey 3 and onward, really, is that, especially with 3, is because it's so much more difficult, you don't need to focus so much on one character. You're building an engine, like a fighting engine. And so each part needs to be like kind of custom made to work with the other parts. So essentially, like if you're if you've got physical attackers, or, you know, if you got like magic users a lot and like physical attackers that are a little weaker on defense, then it would be great to like put the defense class into your prince and have them be not only on that kind of support where, you know, like the healing every turn and things like that, but you can also put up like the brick walls. But if you've already got a defender, then you might consider making them a partial healer. It's not about one character. It's always about, like, you know, because you're going to end up with like one or two characters that can deal all the damage, but you have to like build up to that first. That's the basic gist of it, is like there's no one like class or subclass that wins out above everything else. It's just what part of the engine is this, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Basically make one well-oiled machine unit.
Exactly. Yeah. Like every class and subclass is going to be part of like the support system for your damage output, which is largely going to come from one character or two characters. For me, it was the pirate class, the buccaneers or whatever.
Oh, and the pirates are awesome.
And the arcanists or whatever they were called in that game. I forget if they're the mathematicians or if that's the first game I get. Yeah, it's been a while. But whoever does the magic damage, essentially, like those two, they could take down a boss in like a couple of turns as long as all my other characters were there to like boost them up and like, you know, and keep them alive and, you know. And then, like, my prince character was more for surviving the dungeon because I had the
purple ring.
Yeah, the setup where it's, like, healing with every step, healing every turn in battle. It's like, and I needed all of that, but all the free healing I could get.
I gotta get back on that train, because that one had my favorite music and everything up until, like, the DS ones, but I still kind of go back to that one because it felt...
Hell yeah.
I don't know, it felt more Etrian.
Mel, speaking of trains we got to get on, we should probably get on the review train right now because it's already 45 minutes into the show and we haven't done shit yet.
Hey, Joe, you wanted to talk about Elden Ring, so you
just... I know, and then they started talking about Kirby and Etrian Odyssey.
I know, and I didn't even get to bring up Rune Factory 5.
We were talking about the Kirby cameo for Elden Ring. Sorry. He's in the game.
Cornell did bring it home. He did connect it loosely, so we gotta give him that one.
I didn't even get to talk about my buddy Jeremy playing Elden Ring, and I got to watch him, and then I saw him exit from the tutorial area and see the big dude walking down in the distance, and he's like, "Ooh, I'm gonna fight that," and I was like, "You're gonna die." And it went horribly for him.
Awesome.
As it should, because that thing one hit smacks you. And the balls.
Yeah, sir. I think that's my biggest gripe with these games is you get one hit and it's like 85% of your health. So you use the healing item and then you get hit while you're trying to heal. So all that health you just healed is taken away immediately. And then you try standing up and you try healing again and then you get hit and knocked down again. And it's just a cycle.
But you get up again. So they're never going to keep you down.
Oh, man.
Got to make sure you don't get hit again.
And drink some potion drink.
Easier said than done.
Yes. A potion drink. It takes a potion drink. And when you take
drink some potion drink. Drink.
Keep going. I'm so happy right now.
All right. Should we get to reviews?
All right.
We have a bunch of games to talk about tonight. First game to talk about tonight is Battle Bands Rock and Roll Deck Builder, developed and published by Airy Digital, released March 17th on Steam Early Access for $17.99. Get the band together and take on the world in this Battle of the Bands deck building card game set in the fantasy world of Rift City. Play solo or with friends to conquer the competitive real-time tournaments or offbeat bosses and co-op campaign. Wits and a sick riff are key to becoming a rock legend. Purnell, tell us about your time with Battle Bands.
Before I do that, I want to confirm something. This is currently in early access, right?
Yes.
Good. Okay. that's not a slight. That is not a slight. Let me get that out the way. Because, like I mentioned in the pre-show chat, this game took up enough time that I didn't play another game I was supposed to review. So, I mean, it's a good game. It's just, I want more than what's in there. And the knowledge that's early access gives me a faith that will happen. But what this game is essentially a cooperative deck builder. And it's interesting because before going into the game, like for those who are familiar, the first tabletop game that it reminded me of was one called 5-Minute Dungeon. If you've played that, you're already on the right page. If you haven't, then just keep listening. The idea behind this game is that you are with your band on a tour, the band being either yourself and three computer players or yourself and three friends. You're on a tour bus trying to prepare yourself for what would be pretty much the final confrontation on the center of a map. The rest of the map is composed of randomly generated nodes that represent a variety of different things. But I'll describe the main game before describing or the main battle things aside from the before going to the events, because you need to understand how the freaking game works to talk about that stuff. So the main nodes you're going to end up coming across in this game are battle nodes, because the main idea of the game is your band is going to go up against another band in a music competition. And what ends up happening is each round, you or the opposing band will start a play. And every band member has their own deck of cards that they have to use. And the idea to win the match is to use your cards to get a certain number of, let's call them like reputation points or like, you know, like popularity points. And you do that by playing your cards. You can't just play any old card, though, because you have an energy gauge, which determines having the ability to play a card, because every card has an energy cost. But then you also have to do something that's fairly unique to these games. In a manner similar to Spades, you have to start out what's called a song section by playing a song section card. And what that is you spend the points to lay it on the table. It comes with a reward for completing it, the number of cards that it can hold before it's completed. And again, any bonus effects it might have, like my favorite one is something where if you play it, as long as you haven't completed it, you'll get a bonus defense while you're, you know, waiting for your opponent to play their set. Now, once the song section is down, everyone's going to play cards as long as they have the energy and the means of instrument cards and effect cards to fill the song set. And once that's done, it will close it out. You'll get the bonus from that, plus whatever benefits the other cards gave you. So you might play a card that says cost 2 energy and gives you 5 reputation, and you'll get the bonus for that. You might play another card that says you can get 7 reputation, cost 2 energy, but it gets exhausted, which means you can't use that card for the rest of the stage. There's a variety of different crazy effects this game has, similar to traditional like card, you know, combat games. When your round is up, the opponent will get their turn, and they'll do the same thing. And one thing I like about this game is when you're in the roguelike mode or the tour mode, the opponents are like their own like unique bands. Christ, I did it again. Unique. But anyway, their own unique bands, and they each have decks specifically tailored to them. So you might have like a group called like the Riff Rats. There's a bunch of junkyard rats, and their idea behind theirs is they like to rummage through their trash, aka their discard piles, to use cards, bring them back out and start using them. Or they'll flood your deck with garbage, because you can also use certain effects that will plug garbage into the opponent's hands, which will cost them to use and has negative effects when they use them. it's an interesting gameplay sense. But essentially, if you win a match, you'll get morale points, which is the currency that you have to spend to move around the map, and you'll earn money. If you lose, you lose morale, and that freaking sucks, because if you run out of morale before you, you know, get to the end goal, you lose that run and you have to try again. As you move around the map, you'll come across additional battles. You'll come across event spaces, which could have things like, I don't know, you see a giant taking a bath. What do? And it might be like you need to sneak past him because if he sees you, he's going to charge you to walk by. And if you sneak past, you don't spend anything. But if he catches you, you lose morale and you have to pay like $150 or something. And there's like a bunch of like crazy weird events, some beneficial, some not. There's a gear store where you can buy new cards or you can buy items that will kind of give you better effects, like, you know, bolster of effects for every two or three turns or something like that. You might get more energy or whatever. There's a lot of randomling that I'm doing here because there's a lot of different effects that takes place from these cards when you play them. And the thing about this that I really like, though, as I play this in the battles themselves is I played this solo, right? Which means I have to communicate with the computer characters to tell them to pass me cards and stuff. But when you're playing, if you end up playing this with friends, I would love to see how people react to this because it seems like it would be a lot of fun because you are essentially trying to coordinate with your teammates to determine what the best course of action is to play your cards during your set. Like you might have a card that you feel will do a good job of giving you defense and also reputation. And you don't want to, but you don't have the energy for it because maybe you spent one to get a card that lets you draw that card. So you can reach out to the other players and say, hey, give me some of your energy so I can play this card. And if you're playing this with the computer or also just anyone online without voice chat, you can select a chat option that says, give me energy. And it lets you select the card from your deck to outright tell the other players, I need energy to use this card. And then they can look at it and say, yeah, that is a good card. I want to give you energy for that. And they'll just give you the energy. Like they'll comply to your request. And it's like this nice, fun dance of coordinating your moves to get the best out of what everyone is capable of doing. There's not very many card games I can think of, tabletop or otherwise, that involves multiple people coordinating their decks to get an optimal effect. It's usually you're playing your deck alone. And maybe you'll just benefit your teammates by playing your cards. But this game is very unique in that sense, and I love it for that. Like, it's
unique.
But but the reason why I asked earlier in the episode about, you know, is there still an early access is because there's like I've come across maybe 8 to 10 unique different bands. I dare change the damn word.
You still said unique.
I said unique and I stopped, so I didn't say the full word. You get it.
trying to convince mom that you didn't cuss. Just cuss.
I didn't mean it.
I said son of a beach, mom. I didn't say the bitch word. I said beach.
Also, that show was terrible. So the beach. But like I only came across like 8 to 10 different bands, and each band is its own music in different deck, and that's awesome. But if those are the only bands you'll come across in the game, if this was the final build, I feel like I wish there were more bands in the game, despite having fun with what I've played. So I'm hoping they put more in the game. You do unlock new cards and stuff as you level up on plays, because after every run, you'll get instrument experience based on whatever instrument your main character played on for that session. And you'll also get session experience, which is just a run. And every time you level up, you'll earn new cards and new gear for your character to dress up and customize them. So that's kind of fun. But I really would like, I'm hoping for more bands, because more bands means new custom enemy decks and new music, because every band gets their own track. And I love the music. I mean, like, how much do I like it? I'm probably the only person who's commented on one of their YouTube pages, because I was like, I've been listening to this music at work all day. Thank you. Thanks for making a great OST. It's a very solid OST. And it covers a variety of styles. It's just good stuff. And I love the little, like, my favorite band was, like, I don't remember the name of them, but it was, like, the Good Boys. That's what it was. I posted it on my Twitter. It was the Good Boys, which is, like, a bunch of dogs playing ska. And, like, there's one named Rufus, like, this bulldog who's, like, hurr, hurr, and he's playing the keyboard. Like, that's my boy. I love Rufus. Anyway, this game, I think, is fantastic. There's more that is ways for it to grow. And I believe he's going to grow up, because he even flat out says, if you want to talk about it, got any bugs, anything you want to add, come to my Discord. It says right in the game itself. So I have faith and hope that he is going to expand on this more and add to it, maybe add new events to the map, maybe add new maps, even like with different events unique to those maps. Hopefully more bosses too. But I do have one general complaint that hopefully if he's listening to this, he'll be like, okay, this is something I'm going to do to improve the game. And that is, when it's your turn, you can see all the effects your cards are going to do because, you know, you and your team are playing them. You'll scroll over and look at what stuff does. And you can ask your teammates, if they're human, what did that card do? Why did you play? Stuff like that. But when the enemy is going, the enemy's just doing their routine and they're blasting out cards. You see lights just flying all over the place. The effects are kicking in. You're like, what the hell happened? And yeah, you can scroll over their cards and see what each card did. But depending on who you're battling, there's a lot to review and there's a clock ticking. So you might not be able to keep up. The final boss, when I fought him for my run, and by the way, he kicked the living crap out of me. On one turn, he blasted out like 15 cards. They were all stacked on top of each other. And his score went up like 100 points in one round. I was like, what the hell did this guy do? And I couldn't even review the cards because it was just too much for the time I had. I had to get back to business on my side. Like, maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe there's a way like to pause it just to review the cards. Or if there's like maybe a way to like hit a key button and like have like a text display come up that just shows all the effects in order, like this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. Like that would be pretty helpful. But even not being aware of why I was getting the snot kicked out of me by a particularly good deck of cards, I still very much had fun playing this game. And I'm going to continue to have fun playing this game. So I hope they continue to expand on it and improve it and add more content. But even as it is, Joe.
As it stands, it is an early access at $18. What do you think?
It's a solid buy, worth every penny. And even if you find yourself being like, okay, I had a couple rounds of it, I had fun, but I got to move on until he does more, I feel like the time I spent with it is worth $18. It's a good title.
Nice. All right, up next is Flat Kingdom Papers Cut Edition, developed by GameStarter, published by Rattlelake Games, released April 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $7.99. A wise sorcerer created six magical jewels that kept the effects of the third dimension at bay, granting peace and prosperity. However, one day an evil masked thief named Hex, oh no, not Hex, disrupted the balance and made the chaos return. Hex is good at making chaos return. The only one who could stop chaos is Flat, a little hero able to change into a circle, triangle, or square in order to solve puzzles, overcome obstacles, and defeat giant bosses. Tim, tell us about your time with Flat Kingdom Papers Cut Edition.
It seems like this game would work really well on a PlayStation controller because it maps the square, triangle, and circle transformations as you would expect them to be laid out on a PlayStation controller.
Nice.
But on a Switch controller, it's just X, Y, and B. So that doesn't really translate. But I thought about like, oh, man, that would be so cute on a PlayStation. But I didn't play it on there. So no cute points for you, Flat Kingdom. So, yeah, you're this little dude. It is a 2D platforming adventure where you go through some expected 2D platforming environments of like, okay, here's some like foresty grassland. Here's some watery levels. Here is some, which is weird because you can't actually swim. I'll get to that in a second. Here's a volcano. Here's some caves. I might have already said that one, but either way. Nothing like out the ordinary too much. It is going for kind of a, I won't say Paper Mario, but you know, that like the world is 3D. The characters are like 2D folded up paper looking dudes. And yeah, that it, I don't know that the look of it always really works for me. Like as a, like it doesn't like something about the style of it doesn't really like pop for me. In blending the 2D and the 3D, because you'll see things in the background that are also 2D, but things in the foreground, like a tree in the background might be 2D, but the tree in the foreground is 3D. So it's just kind of like a little bit too mishmashy, I think, with its rules of what it makes what dimension. But you know, overall it looks fine. It is not a disaster on the eyes. But it would have been cooler if it like really had more of its own visual style, that looked awesome. Either way. So, yeah, the main mechanic of the game is that with the touch of a button, you can transform your character into a round guy, a triangle guy, or a square guy, and then you press the other button to jump. So circle guy can double jump. Triangle guy is fast, cannot double jump, but he is very quick, especially moving on horizontal surfaces. And square guy is slow as shit, but can push things over. And, you know, if you turn into a square up in the air, you can slam down on things on the ground and break them. So you make your way through these levels. I think it wants you to be circle guy most of the time. I mean, you want to be circle guy most of the time because he has the double jump, but you also wish you were triangle guy because he moves really fast. And circle guy is just not as fast as triangle guy, but he can double jump. And that's important for just kind of your basic platforming in this game, because triangle guy can't jump that well, and square guy is so heavy he can't jump worth a shit. So you'll go through the environments. You will solve kind of some not excruciating puzzles with these abilities of like, oh, I have to turn into a, you know, jump up here and turn into a brick to smash down here or hit this switch or whatever. Like, oh, this gap I can only get over if I get a nice running start with Triangle Man and fly over it. Like I mentioned, there is no swimming. It's like, when you're in water, you sink when you're the square guy and you float when you're circle or triangle guy. Except I think triangle guy doesn't actually move forward. He just goes straight up to the top. So like the way you swim is kind of like rhythmically transforming back and forth from square to circle so that you move in kind of a wave under the waves. But that was a weird situation that I'm not sure felt totally excellent as a platforming mechanic, but it gets you by. There are also enemies, and this is where I will present some beef towards this game, because the way that quote unquote combat works, your characters don't have any kind of attacks, but they have a like rock, paper, scissors system between the circle, the square, and the triangle, where square beats triangle, triangle beats circle, circle beats square. So you have to kind of read the shape of the enemy and then transform into the appropriate form and then just touch them and they'll die. It doesn't feel great. Like you're not actually attacking them. You're just kind of bonking into them. And there isn't really much of an interaction other than they wilt and die. Or if you're wrong, you take damage. And I don't think it's always clear. I found this especially as the game goes on and you encounter these enemies, I was just kind of guessing. I'm like, well, this enemy's pointy, so I think it's a triangle. And sometimes I was right and sometimes I was wrong. And I was like really vexed on one like particular boss fight, like the second boss of the game. And you have to like bounce. It's a killer whale and you have to bounce some fish back at it to bonk it on the head, and I just could not figure out which form I needed to use to bonk the fish back, because I swear the one that I tried first didn't work, which was actually the correct one, but something didn't happen and I was lost and confused and didn't understand what was going on, and then eventually moved past it. But it's not the best. I think that the character models maybe could have either been more distinctive or, I don't know, color code them or something, but it's not the end of the world, because even though you start out the game with only 3 hearts, you will get more hearts, but also enemies don't do a ton of damage, so it's pretty forgiving and it gives out like health pretty regularly. Like, it is not a taxing experience just trying to stay alive. And it's not like, even if you die, it's not too bad with the checkpointing. That's fine. The actual feel of it, like kind of moving through a level, is kind of a drag. Like I mentioned, Triangle Guy is the one that kind of moves as fast as I think you would like a character to move. And Square Guy is just worthlessly slow. So you really only pull him out when he needs to do something. And Circle Guy doesn't move that fast either, but he has the double jump, so you want to play as him. But you're not like really I don't know. I would want to be moving faster through the levels. My inner platformer guy wants to be moving faster because I'm always holding down my run button and just trying to blast through. And here it's like, well, his little legs only take him so fast. And like I can turn to a triangle, but then it's like, oh, I got to double jump over something. So, and he doesn't jump very high besides that. So it's just kind of like, ah, okay. And it ends up, I think, in the end, just being kind of like fine. It is not a train wreck disaster, but it's not like an exceptional, like, oh my God, this little platformer is so good. You must go and give it the play. It's just kind of like, ah, it's okay. You know, the game is competent and does some kind of neat things with the way you switch between forms. I should mention you do get abilities, I guess I'll say. It's like things that will pop off when you switch between forms. So if like you're dashing, the first one you get, you're dashing with triangle guy. And then if you switch into the rock guy, you'll do kind of like a head skull bash for breaking walls and stuff like that, which doesn't come up too terribly much. But it is there. And that's kind of how they give you other mechanics to play around with while keeping things fairly simple. But, you know, the environments look okay. The overall level design is okay. The feel of actually platforming is okay. But I have certainly played worse. But I've also played better.
Well, it's only $8. What do you think?
It's worth it. It's a try it for me. It's okay. Like, you shouldn't feel the obligation to run out and play it, but it could be worth your dollars, especially if it ends up going on a little bit of a sale at some point. But as is, it's like, it's okay.
Well, it's a Rattalaika. How is it with the achievements and trophies?
I don't know. I played it on Switch.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a Rattalaika, so I'm going to assume it's fairly straightforward and easy-ish for achievements. But yeah,
and you want to play it on PlayStation either, so you get the cool shapes lining up with the buttons.
There you go. So
yeah.
All right, well, Tim, that is it for you.
We're all thinking of this guy just said it.
Yeah, exactly. You have any final thoughts, any final words?
Were you about to ask me about WrestleMania?
I don't know. Do you care about WrestleMania?
Well, there is only one match that I really care about.
Which one? And,
well, it's whoever Seth Rollins' mystery opponent is. That, like, I was literally sitting there like earlier thinking, I'm like, man, Joe's gonna fucking watch it. Maybe if I just have him tell me when that match is coming up, I'll drop into the Discord to watch that, because I do want to see. I want to see that
adrenaline in my soul. Seth Rollins fighting Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes, man. Maybe, I don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows.
No. Dynamite's on Wednesday, and that's more important.
Yes, it is. My gosh, it can't come soon enough. All right. Good night. We'll not stretch.
Night, night, Tim.
Good night.
Good night.
Fairly well tarnished. Fairly well. I like that he laughed right before I said that. It's for the best.
Oh, geez. All right. Next game to talk about is Altrea, developed by Olivier de Rop, published by Red Deer Games, released March 25th on the Switch for $12.99. A little robot becomes a pilgrim and crosses a wild post-apocalyptic world to find the meaning of life. Chris, what's going on in this one?
I don't know that it's that wild, but okay. Altrea. So this is which, by the way, I could not help but learn as I tried to Google this thing for more information. Apparently, the word Altrea actually does mean to go on a pilgrimage.
Oh.
Or it's like a kind of pilgrimage. Anyways. So, but yeah, this is an adventure of a little beep boop robot who wants revenge for the death of his father. So he gets a wild tip from a voice in his own head that, you know, he should go to this neighboring planet, which is called Altrea. And so the game is basically about his sojourn to a distant planet. It's a point and click adventure, one where you walk around and you can hold down, you know, the Y button to check out like points of that you can interact with. It's where you pick up items, put them in your inventory, and later you will use or combine those items to solve puzzles to get to the next area. So it's, you know, it's kind of like, it's very standard in this way. It does not deviate from exactly what I just said. Now, of course, the thing with these kind of games is that what really makes them like amazing is the quality of the puzzles and the quality of like the environment. So everything from the art to the music to the writing, and of course the puzzles are like what, you know, you want that stuff to be interesting so that you want to solve the puzzles and then like, you know, get to the next one and like learn more about this world and this character and all this other stuff. So this game has some strengths and some weaknesses. Its main strength to me is the look. It's very, very pretty. It evokes this like this kind of art style that feels a little old because it's basically 3D characters on pre-rendered backgrounds. But the quality of the backgrounds and the quality of the 3D characters are such that they are almost seamless. Like, it really does seem like the world's just going to, like, kind of come alive instead of being the static background that it is.
Hmm.
Your little robot, like, you know, he's cute. His face is like a little LED screen. And, like, you know, he bobs his head while he walks around. And I didn't know this until, like, about 30 minutes before we went live. But you can actually double-click or double-tap the screen or double-press the A button to make him walk, like, twice as fast. Because yeah, he ambles pretty slowly. But the cool thing is though that it's not that kind of game where if you click on something that's far away, like, you know, going into a distant door or something, you don't have to wait and watch him like enter into the door. It just goes to the next place, which is kind of cool. I always like I like games that kind of give you that option. But so the quality of the puzzles is basically. You know, maybe they get a little harder towards the end, but for the most part, they're fairly straightforward. And part of the reason of that is that if you, like, for instance, there's a drunk robot in a bar. Oh, by the way, I should say a little bit about the setting. This is a world entirely occupied by robots. There's no organic life left, except for some mysterious creatures called the alchemists. They're still organic, and you run into one at one point, and I won't say anything more about that. But like for the most part, it's robots living together, and so like life has changed to accommodate robot life. Sinks like you know, distribute oil instead of water, for instance, and you actually have to know that in order to solve one of the puzzles. But the thing is, so, you know, like you go into this bar and another cool thing I like about the bar is that it's kind of like a style among the robots to wear masks that look like organic beings. So like the bartender's wearing a pig mask and one of the patrons whom you have to score some drugs for, he has on a mask that looks exactly like the main character from Grim Fandango, which is a game this developer name drops as an inspiration. So that's really cool. And if you ask him about it, then he just makes a crack about the developer.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And but yeah, so like in order to, so there's like a drunk guy at the bar, you have to get this key that's on the table that he won't let you have because he's conscious. So you got to knock him out. But it's not enough to just get a bunch of whiskey and pour it in his glass. You have to like make sure that whiskey is like spiked with something else to make, you know, the robot go sleepy time. And, you know this because as soon as you go to pour the whiskey, the robot's like, wait a minute, I need something that will make this stronger so that this guy will go to sleep. What about this or that? You know, like it's very much like, you know, it kind of holds your hand for a lot of the puzzles if you're not doing something exactly right, which is either good or bad, depending on your experience with puzzle games. You know, because sometimes it takes the guesswork out of it, and that's kind of bad. But sometimes it's like, oh, well, now I don't have to pixel hunt for, like, the one obscurest thing in the world that's going to, you know, turn this, you know, bubble gum into a fishing rod. You know, like that kind of deal. So... Yeah. You know, that's your mileage may vary on that. But yeah, like I said, the art style is really good. The rest of almost everything else is a little lacking. Music's very minimal. Sometimes it you know, pops in with some jazzy stuff, but a lot of the times it's just like kind of dire, you know, dystopian synth work, which is, again, good or bad, depending on your taste. But like dialogue with characters is very sparse, and your character... Like, I know that your character is a robot, right? But you don't get to know very much about him or his motivations or his personality. It's, you know, the point and click protagonist is supposed to be like this endless font of like charm as they, you know, point out all the different kinds of things that happen in the world and stuff. This guy's very matter of factly. His name's Nymo, by the way, I think. Yeah, Nymo. But and then there's also the second character, which is the kind of disembodied voice that lives in his head, that it, you know, it shows the interior of his head, which is, of course, machinery. And it, you know, when the voice talks to you, but there's not like, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for like, you know, interplay. Like one of them can be the stand in for the audience. The other one can be like a goofball or something. Like, you know, a lot of games get this right. So, yeah, this it's a game that like all of its charm is kind of like in the settings themselves and just the idea behind the whole thing. But yeah, as far as like the actual character dialogue and stuff, I was just like, oh, okay. Could have put a joke in there or something, but you know, hey, whatever.
No, the game.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the game's sitting at $12.99, but in normal Red Deer fashion, the game is on sale on the Switch for $1.99.
Oh, flip. Yeah, go buy it for $1.99 for sure. $12, I would say. This is just edging up to a buy it, but it's still in try it territory. And mostly because I kind of did look ahead and notice that this game is remarkably short. For an average point and click fan, this will probably be about a 3 hour game. So that's
not bad,
you know,
for $2.
Not bad for $2 at all. And like I said, $2, that's worth it just to look at it, because it is, again, it's very pretty to see. That might be the main point for me, is like I like the way the game looks and I like the setting and the idea so much that I just kind of wish they would have fleshed it out a bit, in a manner of speaking.
I see what you did there. Even better is if you own some Red Deer games, it's discounted even further. I was able to buy it for 99 cents.
Yeah, I talked way too much about it for it to be a 99 cent game. So
so if you could get it on sale, it sounds like this is a good one to pick up.
Yeah, $2 is definitely worth it. Yeah, cool. For sure.
All right, well, next up is Expedition Zero, developed by Enigmatic Machines, published by Tiny Build, released March 24th on Steam for $19.99. Expedition Zero, survival horror set in the anomaly zone of the Northern Forest. Face the dreadful forest monster and find a way to defeat it. Reveal the secrets of the lost expedition and your mysterious enemy. It's either hunt or be hunted. Brooke, what's going on in Expedition Zero?
You know, surprising a lot is going on in this game, considering that it's going to take most players, I'm guessing, like 2 to 4 hours to complete this one. This is your standard, like, horror game that takes about an evening or two length of game. And as always, you can take the amount of time it would take a good player to complete the game, multiply that by three, and you got me. So people like me can easily get a good 6 hours of entertainment out of this bad boy if you're just dying and getting lost over and over again, like I somehow do in every game, even when it's not Elden Ring. Considering then that this is a game that's going to take most people an evening or two tops to complete, this game has a shitload going on. It opens up, you're in a 3D world, first-person perspective, out by an old shack in the winter. Your first quest is just get inside the shack, get inside your shelter. But the door is electronically locked and electronically, like, gated. So you got to find the generator, turn it on, then you can get the door open. Inside, you find a crowbar you can use to break things apart, start salvaging parts for crafting new items, like a flashlight, or a really, really good face mask to filter your breathing air, because guess what, baby? Everybody in this game is dead or zombies because of some mysterious plague of mysterious spores in the air that either are going to kill you or make you into a shambling mess of a person who's going to attack the main character if given the chance, albeit pretty weakly. So there's crafting, there's combat, and you can do melee combat with an axe or that crowbar we talked about. You can do range combat with a gun. There's a lot of options here. Soon after getting your shit together in the shelter with the generator you got into, you're given an objective. You got this guy in a walkie-talkie, basically, and he's communicating with you intermittently throughout the game. He wants you to find three, I don't remember what he calls it, but he uses a weird term. He's like, three specimens or three samples of some sort to bring to this scientist-type dude you're working for so he can destroy the plague. I know I'm using a weird phrase here saying, you know, vague term to describe what's happening here, destroy plague and such, but I'm using the terms the game itself is using. Your main mission throughout this game that you can refer back to in your quest log is destroy plague, which I think is charming and cute. These specimens, these samples you need, they're somewhere out there in the wilderness. And the wilderness is a black void, nothing that you explore. And as you explore, you got a map that's slowly filling out, going from black and void, nothing, to just what you're finding on your map, what you've discovered so far. And these specimens you have to collect, they're not going to be exactly what you're expecting. You're not going to come across like a test tube or something to turn in. You're going to exploit different locations and definitely do some type of riddle solving to get these specimens and locations across the map. It sounds a little confusing, and it is objectively, but when you get your first specimen, you'll know. The game's like, oh shit, you got a specimen, good job, this is one of the things you're supposed to get. So we got crafting, we got riddles, we got exploration, we got combat, and we also have resource management. Not getting killed by zombies or whatever isn't the only way that you got to stand alive in this game. You also need to not inhale too much plague. You need to stay warm enough to survive. This killed me a bunch. When you're out exploring, you'll slowly become more and more cold unless you stop to warm yourself back up. Even in a shelter, if there's not a source of heat that you've somehow activated in a shelter or some resting place or camp you're at, there's not a fire or a stove or something that you have activated or put crafting materials in, you'll slowly become more and more cold until you stop to somehow warm yourself back up. You can do that with a space heater, but those are extremely few and far between. Mostly in your journey, you're going to have to harvest raw wood, take it to a log splitting log. What do you call that? It's the log you put the log on before you chop it. What do I call that?
Chopping log?
Yeah. Okay, let's go with that. All right. Hey, it's our made up game phrase of the week. I'm over here. I'm sure the game called it something cool. But similarly, when you're crowbarring stuff apart to salvage it, you also have to break down the materials into more raw components. Screws will become metal. Old PCB boards will become electronics. A lot of other plasticky stuff will become polymer. Even your wood, like you'll harvest raw wood, but you need to chop it to get, you know, the wood that you're going to put in the oven or the stove or whatever the building you're in happens to have, or the campfire. That sounds a lot more complicated in the game than it is, considering this is a shorter game. But really, all you're doing is crowbarring stuff until it dies, taking all the pieces away from it into your inventory and pressing one button to break all the raw materials down into these three categories. We got a lot going on, but I don't want to give anything away past that because this is not a terribly long game. But
fair.
This game does have a lot more going on in it than just kill zombies and plague. It's a lot more going on than just explore, map, find stuff, turn it in. It's got some super crazy plot twists you will not see coming. And as far as how the game feels as you play it out, it's legit scary and unsettling. It's got really great ambiance, really well done immersive environment overall, especially for a shorter game like this. If anything, it feels like kind of a complete experience with all the resource management and crafting and everything. It's not the most polished game in the entire world, but it really feels like, given all the toys they're giving you to play with and engines and tools and resource management and whatnot, they're giving you a lot considering the time they expect you to put into this game. It almost feels like you'd be settling in for a longer experience, but that does end up making it a really immersive kind of post-apocalyptic salvagey experience that I really did enjoy.
Cool. Well, it's $20. What are your thoughts?
This is a try it from me. Why is it not a buy it from me at this price? It will be once they work on the game a little more. And I say will be because instead of if they will, like we talked about last week, because they have been working around the clock, like patching it like crazy. I am not like the first person to give feedback. They are just like really responding to all the early reviews and all the beta testing. And they're doing like a couple patches a day, as far as I can see on Steam. Like they really seem to be working around the clock. And the issues that I did have playing it, just kind of buggy stuff that's not quite right. It's not at all like the two deniers I've given before for similar issues where they would make the game unplayable. This game's totally playable. It's totally finishable. In my opinion, littler stuff is when a game's resolution breaks or something and you have to like quit the program and restart it to be able to read everything on the screen again. I wouldn't even mention something like that specifically after already making it clear the game does have a couple technical issues to work out. But I only do mention that because there are newer gamers out there and there are older but still stupid gamers out there like me who can have things like that happen and go, oh my God, what's happening? I can't read anything. The game's broken. Holy shit. And, you just after you get through a couple games like that, you need to close it out, mess with the settings and try again. Maybe do it like windowed, but where you can't really see the windowing, if that makes sense.
Thank you for shouting out stupid people. I feel seen.
You know what? We're old friends. We've always had that in common. So we'll always have that. I did die the first time that happened to me in the game because you do have to pay attention to this game. It is like, oh, that's happening really fast. But luckily, the game itself is aware enough to have had an autosave like right before that. So it's no real problem for me personally. And when something is a problem for me technically that I think is an issue, y'all know I'm going to say it. So just worth noting that it's stuff like that we're dealing with that's actively being patched right now. I feel confident giving this one a try it. For sure. What is it? This game is $20. I thought it was like $18, but is it closer to $20?
$19.99.
Cool. You know, I am one of those people where if I want to have an experience for the evening or two evenings, and I know that it's only going to be a few hours of playtime, I don't mind paying $20 for a game like that at all. You know, escape rooms are really big right now. We're still kind of, you know, we're kind of in this pandemic territory where Carrie and I haven't been going out much. But when I get a horror game like this, it's going to take me like an evening and I start to realize it might have like some puzzly stuff going on. I like to load it up and if Carrie's bored, he plays it with me. And then for $20, it's kind of like we've done an escape room or something together. And we get to stay home. And for a budgetly homebody like me, that is just perfect. So I think this is really going to be worth the price at sitting around $20. I think it probably already is. And I know that this publisher and developer are really receptive to feedback. And I super appreciate that.
Well, beans. All right. Well, that is it for you. Were you going to stick around or did you need to head out?
Since it's closer to 8:30, I'm going to head out. For this time, but you know, I want you all to know that I love you all very much, and I'll see you next week. And you know what's cool is I just started playing the other game you gave me, Joe, for next week, and just a little hint for next week. You also have a crowbar, and you're just beating shit up with a crowbar is the main thing in the game, and I'm really enjoying that. So I'm looking forward to next week too.
So note for the future: get crowbar games.
Yeah, but you know, it turns out Brooks likes that.
Looking forward to Crowbar Quest next week.
Yes. All right. Well, good
Elden
night, you
guys. Crowbar.
Night.
That's actually my weapon of choice in Elden Ring. Okay. Good night, you guys. Bye.
Night, Elden Crowbar.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Thunder Kid Hunt for the Robot Emperor, developed by Renegade Sector Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released March 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $7.99. Thunder Kid is a low-poly 3D run-and-gun action game controlled from behind the main character, shifting the perspective of genre classics and adding bullet hell elements while retaining its hallmark features. Take down enemy bots and massive enemies in a unique blend of retro style. Chris, tell us about your time with Thunder Kid.
Okay, so Thunder Kid. So I first want to shout out the beginning story, the opening cinematic of this game, which tells the tale of how in the year 2001X, so within the last decade, the U.S.-Canada war became so heated that a robot emperor rose in the ashes of North America. And that's the lore of this game, and I quite enjoy that.
Nice.
So yeah, you are the Thunder Kid. Doesn't say whether you're American or Canadian, but you are cybernetically enhanced, and you get dropped down into these 3D levels.
You transcend nationality.
You really do. Here's the thing, though. Your character is done up in this kind of canary yellow and bright blue getup that, from the back, looks totally like bad box art Mega Man from the first Mega Man game that came out in the US. So I like to imagine that's who you're controlling. I think they changed him just enough where he doesn't, isn't quite the same character, but I totally got that feel. And especially given that, like, the low poly, low texture style of this game, it kind of plays it plays and looks a little bit like Mega Man Legends. I don't want to hype it up that much, but
yeah, it's not an RPG at all.
No. Yeah. You get that feel for it though. So yeah, the gameplay is a little bit like a 3D Battle of World Runner, but without like being able to just go anywhere. Like, you're actually set on a pretty narrow path. Sometimes only three bad box art Mega Mans wide. And yeah, there's just enemies on different levels, and your two commands are run and shoot. And you run forward and shoot those enemies. Really what this game boils down to is getting to the end of the stages. Usually it's a few stages, and getting to the bosses. The bosses are actually pretty cool. There are about six bad box art Mega Mans in size, and their bullet patterns are very like kind of bullet hellish. But a lot more forgiving. And of course you can, you know, kind of jump over most things that would challenge you, but they got like these big life bars and stuff. Might remind some people of like, you know, bad box art Elden Ring or something. But but yeah, that's basically all it is that you just run, avoid enemies who are on different levels than you, you know, try to find the safe spot and just kind of jump and shoot until you can run forward and then get to that boss and learn the boss and beat the boss.
Yeah, is one that didn't really have my attention. Like, I saw it in the store and I saw pictures of it and I was like, I don't know about this one.
It's fun once you get it going, but honestly, it's very what you see is what you get.
Yeah, I watched Carnage stream it and really sold me on picking up the game. I thought the game looked really cool in motion. Once I actually saw the game being played, I thought it was really distinct and it looked pretty entertaining.
Distinct.
for an $8 game, I thought it looked pretty solid, although I did not like the soundtrack at all.
This is where the soundtrack is what I'm going to call divisive. if you like weird, kind of off-key stuff, like almost not quite avant-garde, but very unusual for video game music, then you should listen to this soundtrack with an open mind and be like, oh yeah, they're doing some interesting things here. If you are going in expecting Mega Man music, you're going to get bad box art Mega Man version of music.
What is with you and bad box art
Mega Man? He looks like bad box art Mega Man, so.
He does, yeah.
I just like how in this dystopia, bad box art Mega Man became a unit of measurement.
Yes.
In Canada, yeah.
Specifically in Canada.
That's official Canadian measurements.
Yes.
Yeah. So $8 on this one. What do you think?
That's a real tough call, man. I'm going to go ahead and say buy it to fans of like things that I'm describing. Like, you know, back of the, you know, over the shoulder running guns that are basically not quite on rails, but there's nowhere to move besides the straight line that they give you. Even when you like go to a different room, if you like have to turn, your character just crab walks into the next room. And then that room conveniently is laid out all in front of you. Like, it's decent. Yay. I was just about to say verbatim what Carnage just said in chat. Decent, but not a ton of replay value. Yes. It's also not super hard unless, you know, you're just whatever.
Yeah, and it's easy achievements. So,
well, yeah, but I played it on Switch, so no.
Well, yeah, you played on. So I played on Xbox and easy achievements. So
cool. There you go. I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna give the soundtrack a buy it. I'm gonna give the bad box art Mega Man a deny it.
So it just runs the full range of emotions with this one.
Exactly.
All right, well, next up is Super Cyborg, developed by Artur Games, published by Dragius Games, released March 31st on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $6.99. Super Cyborg is an old-school, non-stop, hardcore, run-and-gun action game. You are an elite battle cyborg who is sent in to investigate a series of anomalies on a mysterious island. Purnell, what's going on in Super Cyborg?
A very short review. Basically, this game is Contra, and that's not a slight. That's just a really good description. It is classic Contra at that. Like, we're talking the NES original Contra release. The idea behind this game is you choose a character who is a cyborg character, or not so much you choose him, but if you push start to begin the game, you get to kind of customize your character as far as like the colors that he has. But aside from that, he's a just like a generic character that you control. But once you start a level, the idea is that you are going from left to right, trouncing enemies in your wake, hopefully getting to the boss in the end, trouncing him too, and moving on. You have a few options of a few abilities at your disposal. You can run, you can jump, you can use a regular shot, which is just like if you hold down the fire button, you'll do like a rapid fire shot. Then there's another button that you can press, as in not the original gunfire button, but a new button that lets you fire a charge shot. And then aside from that, well, that's pretty much the gist of it. And frankly, that's all I really want out of this anyway. I just kind of was sad that unlike in some of the later versions of Contra, you can't hold more than one sub-weapon item and like switch between them as you go. Sub-weapon items, for those who have never played a Contra game, I'm sorry. But also, every once in a while, as you're running through the stage, a bubble will fly by, or you might come across like a sort of, we call it a wall plate, that you can blow up. And when you destroy it, you'll get one of a variety of different guns. You might get a laser gun, which fires laser shots. You find a spread gun shot, a machine gun shot. And there's another weapon that is kind of new to this game that's not in Contra, which is kind of like an energy burst, which you fire it, and then when it connects to the enemy, it actually explodes in four orthogonal direction shots, which is kind of nice. And all of these weapons have unique charge shots. So,
unique.
Yes, right, baby. They have their own unique charge shots, so you can work with those, and it's kind of fun to mix and match and use the ones as you see fit, because you might find yourself getting used to a weapon and then trying to dodge the special item bubble because you like the one you're using. You don't want to deal with the other item. There's a score that happens that's in the game that you won't care about unless you're going for extra lives, because you do get an extra life for a certain number of points. Every time you run out of lives, you can continue. And continuing is nice in this game because it actually saves your progress, so you can continue on the level you died on, and at certain points continue at a checkpoint in the stage that you died on. So the game is challenging, believe it or not. It's a surprisingly challenging game, but at the same time, it's generous with checkpoints and the like, so you can, holy crap, what is that shit? I'll come back to that later. But as far as that's an Elden Ring what the fuck statement, because holy shit. But as far as this game goes, it's a genuine good time in the sense that, like, it's nice in the sense that it allows you to not have to suffer through replaying the whole game again if you don't want to. But at the same time, it still gives you a challenge where you might find yourself redoing the same stage, you know, here and there, because there's some cheap kills, like a bullet that comes out at a weird trajectory and it just knocks you out, or an enemy that fires bullets in a way that only has like one effective way to dodge it.
Yeah, so, that sounds like Contra. So.
Yeah, that's right. But it's a fun time, because to me, this, I mentioned this in a lot of other general dialogues, which is that I like that when games decide they don't want to give up the challenge moniker, because I like challenging games. But when they decide not to give them up, but instead favor the usage of, you know, better checkpoint systems or ways for you to ultimately just try again. Like, you'll die a lot, but trying again is just, you know, a button press away instead of, okay, now I got to play through stages 1 through 5 in order to retry stage 6. Now you can just retry right now. And that's kind of nice. So it's forgiving in that regard. Ultimately, it's a very simple, you know, review concept for it. If you like classic running gun games and you're looking for one more, you really can't go wrong with this one. It's a fun one more go game. So it gets my approval for sure.
Now $7. What's your official verdict then?
Go ahead and purchase it. Bill and Lance would be pleased and proud.
Yeah, the general consensus with this one seems to be that this is a Contra game if Konami still put out Contra games. Like good Contra games.
Yeah, none of that rogue shit, whatever the hell that game was. That game was terrible.
Yeah.
They couldn't give it away.
All right, we got one last game to talk about tonight. That is called the Requiem Origins Collection, developed and published by Nape Games. It is available on the Nintendo Switch in standard and collector's editions through the Nape Games website and other retailers. This package includes the Ploid Saga, which on its own is an $11.99 title. It includes Requiem Cherry Dreamland, which is $6.99, and it includes Requiem DX, which is exclusive to this physical edition. So if you want Requiem DX, you got to pick up this physical edition of the game.
And if they wanted me to review it, they should have sent me one.
Fair. Well, Chris, what's going on in this collection? How are the games? What do you think of this package?
Oh, my God. Okay, so this is actually 5 games, but I have done my best to kind of shorten this to, like, something reasonable. Okay, so the Ploid Saga, we're going to start with that. That's the that's a 4-in-1 title that comes with these games that are very... like, you can tell by the fake box art that they put in these, it's very Capcom-like. Capcom on NES, like, inspired. Like, they got the little red logo and everything. So, yeah, you've got Void Plus and Ploid. Those games are so identical that I'm just going to combine them. They are action platformers starring either Alpha the boy or Omega the girl. And like basically it's a little bit Mega Man and a little bit Mario in the sense that it has breakable bricks that you can jump under, which is odd. But it's also kind of Mega Man-ish in like the graphic style and the fact that the boy only has a gun. The girl gets a lot faster movement speed and a triple jump. But basically, the idea behind these games is that, again, after the U.S.-Canadian War of 10X, no, just kidding. Yeah, they're like basically it's robotics and like cybernetic enhancements and like saving the world from like the future and stuff. Like there, for some reason, every time I get a collection of games to review, they all have a tying theme. But yeah, it's basically that you got to get from the one side of the level to the other side of the level, and that's it. You don't have to fight enemies if you don't want to. There are trinkets to pick up, but all they do is contribute to a score that eventually gives you more lives. However, there are checkpoints, so you don't actually really need the lives. So there's basically, you just go until you get to the end. Like I said, one character really, you know, can jump on enemies, but that's about it. And again, the boy has the blaster, so he's the one I played the most as. And yeah, just, you know, just do it. Like that's all there is to say about them. So then we have two other titles on this game. One is Uchuzen, which is a side-scrolling shmup. Now this one is, like I said, it's a horizontally scrolling shmup where you basically shoot down very similar looking enemy ships that are also firing at you. You can pick up power-ups to give yourself a spread shot. You can pick up extra lives and things like that. And then eventually you get to a boss, which is this big like demon in a glass case or whatever, that inexplicably, because, you know, like with shmups, like it's all about the boss and like the bullet patterns that you have to memorize and all this other stuff, right? The one and only boss in this game fires one line of shots right down the center of the screen. So all you got to do is get close enough to that stream to hit it in the weak spot, which is the part that's firing at you, and take its life bar down. And at the end of every stage is this same boss. As far as I know, that game, this game does not end. It just loops the same four levels, and you just get more and more score. I did it like 3 times and it still wasn't done. So I was like, okay, I don't know what to say at this point, so I'm just going to move on from this. It doesn't have auto shot either, so it's kind of like you either have to have a auto fire controller, which I do, or you have to like wear out your thumb just shooting, you know, and moving around the screen and stuff. It looks good, it sounds good, but it is ultimately not an interesting shooter. The other one, however, Uchuzen 2, Ultimate Ploid Battle, is what it's called. It's hard to read. Now, this is a vertical shooter, which does have auto fire, and the difficulty is ratcheted up considerably. You pick from like a mech, a ship, some other stuff, and you again just go through the level, fight ships until you get to the boss. Now, the bosses actually do have some mean bullet patterns, and they're actually very, very difficult. Mostly because they forgot the one rule of bullet hells, and that's to make a small hitbox. I think your entire ship is the hitbox in this game, so that turns it into like not the best experience for like fans of like vertical shooters. But it's not bad. It's just a weird choice because they could have easily not made that choice. So that's the 4-in-1 collection. It's two platformers that are identical, and then a horizontal shooter and a vertical shooter. Now then, we get to the one I want to talk about, Requiem Cherry Dreamland. So this is neatly one of the oddest ideas I've ever seen put into a game, in that I don't understand the choices that were made here. So you play as Cherry, who is, I guess, rescued by a fairy or something like that. So it's this girl, warrior, and her fairy friend. And you're going through basically a platforming and sword swinging, arrow shooting kind of romp through various levels. Actually, there's quite a few of them. And, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Popple Mail or something like that, like one of those old Falcom, like, you know, side scrollers. That's giving it too much credit now. Don't get too excited, Purnell. But it is kind of like that. It's like it's a straightforward platformer with sword swinging and stuff. And but here's the thing. You know, you're imagining like a fantasy setting, you know, anything from like a Popple Mail to a Rostan Saga or something like that, just like, you know, or a Rygar even, like a platforming, fighting enemies with your sword, you know, trying to make your way through the stages and stuff like that. Then they took that and then gave it Cuphead style of graphics and music. So it's got Hokum Jazz like playing. Like Squirrel Nut Zippers shit, and and your characters look like a freaking Bob Clampett or Fleischer cartoon unless you're playing the game. In the game, they have kind of standard looking sprites. Like there's nothing that's like Cuphead, like cartoony 1930s 20s style animated about them. But then you get to the cutscenes and stuff, and suddenly it's, everybody's got the big googly eyes, and like the letters are all bouncing up and down. And again, it's, you know, ya-cha-cha kind of jazz. yeah. It is so incongruous that I have no idea what to like make of it. It's also monochrome. This game is only in a shade of brown. There's no color in it whatsoever. And like I said, the gameplay itself is not bad. I would say that this is actually gameplay-wise the best of the set. It's still kind of rough. It's basically going through these side-scrolling these platforming stages, trying to find the key to a door. And usually it involves backtracking a lot to find like the key to a certain door. Then you get through that door, and then that opens a door that was at the beginning of the level, etc., etc. While trying not to lose your 3 hearts, which you can of course increase if you're good, and you can find like the extra hearts. And then there's like portions where you get to play as just the fairy trying to find a key to a door, and that's like top down view, and it's like one hit kills, and it's kind of funny because the main concern, like enemy to concern the fairy, are Cyclops bees. They're just bees with one eye. And I'm like, doesn't that make them less dangerous? The eye's not the dangerous part of the bee. A bee without depth perception is not as dangerous. But I appreciated it as a joke, though. That's a very video game philosophy to like apply. But yeah, just this weird mishmash of like Fleischer cartoon, but also with just a standard sword swinging platformer, like set in RPG land. It's like, I still, there's no explanation for it, and I don't get it. I kind of like it, but I ultimately kind of don't. So that's Requiem Cherry Dreamland for you.
Well, Requiem Cherry Dreamland is $7. Ployd Saga is $12. What are your thoughts on the two individual titles?
Individually, I'm going to give Ployd Saga a deny and Requiem Cherry a try. Because Requiem Cherry, for its weirdness, I mean, the elements that are there are good. The weird jazz music is good. The graphics do look nice, even though there's no color. The gameplay is acceptable. Ployd Saga is just like, if they would have taken all four of those games and tried to make one big, like, serviceable game out of it, I would have been a lot more into it. But it's just kind of like I just played level after level. Like, at first, with the first three games, I was, like, just playing level after level after level. And I was like, nothing is changing. Like, I need something else to happen. Ployd did not charm me. And Cherry just made me weird it out. And that in itself is a value to me. So That's how I rate them individually.
Oh, there you go. The physical version, if you can find it, the gamecollection.net has it for $24.95 British pounds. I believe Play Asia might carry it as well. Either way, do you think it's worth trying to find the physical version of this and track it down for collector purposes, or is it worth it?
Well, I'm going to say no. Just as a person who has filled up a shelf like quite consistently with Switch physical games. But, you know, like, I'm starting to see where it's like the game is like 100 megabytes to download or something, maybe not worth taking up some shelf space. So, like, of course, your mileage may vary, but personally, I wouldn't do it. Right. I'm not sure about this extra game that's in there. Maybe it's good, but after playing these Ploid Saga games, I'm like, I don't think it's going to be. Willing to change my mind, but again, if they wanted me to review that one, they should have sent me a
prove
a box.
Him wrong, children. Prove him wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it looks like PlayAsia has the package for $34.99, which isn't too bad for a cool collector box with six games in there.
I mean, hey, yeah, go for it. If that sounds good to you, I mean, I was not offended by this stuff. It's just, again, it did not do it for me.
No. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one.
Those other two. We did it.
Fuck them. We did it.
We did
it on our own.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't realize that we were going to draw a line in the sand. I would have left the show way earlier like I planned.
We're going to draw the line in the sand. We're going to have gang warfare on SML. It's going to be Elden Ring versus Etrian Odyssey. Pick your fucking side. This shit's going down.
That's going to be a hard battle. I like both games very much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do too, but yeah, Etrian, that's going to be my side.
Like, that's where you're just going to get it. I mean, it's got Yuzo Koshiro tracks. I mean,
exactly. Shit. Yeah, until I hear something that's like Rage of End of the Raging Waves on Elden Ring.
You're not gonna.
Yeah, exactly.
Gonna.
If I heard that when a boss popped up, I would I would lose it. I would jump out of my chair.
Pretty much every epic track in Elden Ring is busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Every track. Not saying it's bad, it's just you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I totally. And you know what? Like, that's the thing. Yuzo Koshiro also did the music for some of the Souls games, right?
I know Motoi Sakuraba did, but Yuzo Koshiro did too.
Oh, you got me. You got me. You're right. It was Motoi. Damn it.
That'll teach you.
Hey,
that wrecked my knowledge of video game music.
Wrecked.
Carnage was like, I thought I heard rectum. It's like, of course you did, asshole. All right. Well, thanks to you two for being here, hanging out. Thanks to Brooke and Tim for being here as well, doing their thing. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Get you and Chris need to get some Elden Ring time. And said next week will be a full on podcast of Ramadama Ding Dong.
Yeah, like I'm going to plan for another Elden Ring one, and you guys are just going to talk about Kirby for 20 minutes again.
I was going to say,
dicks. Like you say that, I wonder if Kirby is going to be done. Like, it's the flavor of the week type game. Like, it's going to be like, okay, I have my Kirby fun. Next week, it's going to be.
Kirby's always the flavor of the week, but there's always another week.
That's what I mean. There's going to be like a bunch of others. Like, I mean, I love me some Kirby, but who knows what's going to drop next week? Maybe some other crazy title. I don't know.
Hell, I also got that triangle strategy too. I heard that one's long. maybe I'll just pop in that Etrian Odyssey Nexus and start playing that instead.
How far did you play the other ones, dude? Like, at least not beat them, but you played the other ones?
I played the first one, the very first one, and Millennium Girl to almost the same place, and that's, like, basically right after the first big boss. Then I beat 3, I beat 4, and I got, I'm going to say, like, maybe halfway through the first stratum of Etrian Odyssey 5. I kept starting that game.
Because I played a good chunk of Millennium Girl, but didn't finish it. But I played through the main storyline of the original first game. And even without having the characters and all that, I personally thought the twist in that game was really cool. Nothing that's groundbreaking or anything, but it was awesome for that game's world.
Yeah, Etrian Odyssey 3, they throw some curveballs at you too.
Oh.
This show's never ending.
Ever!